Hello, and welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, you can chat with us live on YouTube tonight, so hello and good evening to YouTube, as well as on the Facebook stream. So hello, Facebook. You know me, my name is John Ruark. I'm a past master of the Patriot Lodge, number 1957, in Fairfax, Virginia. And let's go around the horn real quick and show off some better enhanced brothers. We'll start with, who do we start with? We'll start with Jason Richards. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm good, John. How are you?
I am great tonight.
Awesome. For those of you who don't know, who have lived the last 7 years under a rock, I'm Jason Richards, past master of Acacia Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia, and member of the Colonial Lodge number 1821 in Washington, D.C.
You missed a great Masonic joke. If you've been living under a rough ashlar for the past 7 years, then you obviously haven't also met the one, the only, Juan Sepulveda. Good evening, Juan. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, brothers. Good to see you. Juan Sepulveda here from Orange Blossom Lodge number 80 in sunny Kissimmee, Florida, and the brother behind the Gentleman's Brotherhood.com. Good to see you.
That's a great catchphrase. It's catching on. Last but not least for tonight, Robert Johnson. Hello and good evening.
Hello and good evening. Robert Johnson, past master of Waukegan Lodge number 78 in Waukegan, Illinois, and a current sitting secretary over at Space Novum Lodge 1183 in Libertyville, Illinois, host of the Whence Came You Masonic podcast. Thanks.
Back to you, John. Thanks, John.
That's right.
So, Mike's out tonight, but hopefully we'll get him back next week. This has been a very special episode of TMR because you might see a little bit of shifting of lighting, shifting of video. This episode is absolutely 100% dedicated to the patrons who've been supporting the show. We went on a little shopping spree to make sure that we had the highest quality output, and we're just going to keep getting better over the next week. But this was a big equipment purchase. We got different lighting effects and high resolution cameras. And so, we just want to thank you from the very, 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 very bottom of our hearts, for making this possible. This has been a 7 year journey what do you call it when you work for something? It's a labor of love. That's it. That's the phrase I was looking for. It's been a labor of love. And so we could not have done this. We absolutely could not have done this without your support. And so, this is making it happen. Like we say, we don't take a dollar from this. We put all of it right back into the show. And so this is it. This is absolute evidence of your support going right back into the show. And it means so much. Anything else you guys want to add and jump in on that?
We do appreciate all the love and support, and we recognize not everybody is able to become a Patreon and support us in that manner. And this is like John said, like that's not why we do it. We don't do it so that you can send us money or buy our things. We do it because we genuinely love Freemasonry. We love the potential it has of changing lives, and we live in a very privileged moment in history where, from the comfort of our homes, we can come together, we can reach you with messages that can uplift you, that can inform you to make better decisions in life, that can unleash the potential that you have as a man so that you can have a bigger impact in society. We're lucky for that. And just you watching, just you liking, sharing, all of those are ways in which you contribute to help our mission. And for that, we thank you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Robert?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, this whole thing has been incredible so far, and really, without all of you, none of this would be possible. As John has said, it's turned our offices into micro legit studios. we crossed a threshold a while back where YouTube would have allowed us to use like these, like kind of pop-up studio things, right? And you had to have like 10,000 subscribers to be able to accomplish that. And while we did that, we all just got bummed out, right? I think a few weeks ago, John or Jason had said something along the lines of, YouTube killed all of these pop-up studios.
I mean, COVID took a big hit on that.
They did.
Sure. Yeah. And so now here we are, though, you know, still kind of at what I'm hoping, you know, what I'm hoping is the tail end of this pandemic, as we get vaccinated or whatever. But now we've been able to take this next step and really make this premium content, I think. And I hope you guys all enjoy it. Is more and more people like, you know, when we first started, I was like, oh, yeah, and we'll just create a separate audio stream for our podcast listeners. And it, as a guy who started off in podcast only and doing no video, I can tell you it was a strange thing to notice that when Whence Came You started doing video, people listened to it. And I was like, wow, that's really weird that you just listen to a show on YouTube with a title screen only. But I don't know. It's just so weird. And this has been able to make premium content for YouTube for everybody out there who does enjoy watching.
I'll add to that too, before Jason jumps in, because I remember distinctly sitting right over there on my sofa with a built-in laptop mic for episode one. Right, I had zero external mics. It was just the little tiny like pinhole that's over by your keyboard, and like if you move your hand, it'll like cover up the mic. So from going from that to this has been a great journey, learning, you know, journey as well to figure out how all this stuff works. Jason.
Oh, yeah. No, the first couple episodes I filmed in my basement, I put my laptop with my integrated laptop webcam and microphone on the couch, and I actually sat on the floor to get the angle right where the lights weren't like beating down on me and white, you know, getting like some whiteout, major whiteout going on there. So, yeah, for everybody who's supporting the show, you guys are awesome. You are just helping the show get better. And we really, really appreciate all your support.
And let's not even talk about Nick Johnson's like dungeon that he was filming out of. I don't know where he was in his house, but we'll just move on from that.
In the closet. I mean, you guys can't talk about how janky your setups were.
Yeah.
Because I do recall somebody from a podcast who had like a makeshift pop filter out of Kleenex, and who was that? I can't remember.
You'll think of it. It'll come halfway through the show. Yeah. All right. So again, once again, thank you all very much. And if you want to keep contributing and helping the show move into the next, you know, I guess it's like TMR 2.0. Let's get into 3.0 in the future. Head on over to patreon.com/themasonicroundtable. Chip in a few bucks, and it helps us make better education going forward. So let's talk about tonight's episode is on the concept of dualism or duality. This is something that I've been wanting to do for a while because it is a philosophic side. I really do appreciate the esoteric and philosophic points, the morals of the lessons that were taught in our degrees. And so we don't spend a lot of time, if you've gone through the three degrees, it's like drinking from a fire hose, right? So you're going to get a lot of just surface level things. One analogy, especially in the Scottish Rite, if you're doing the Blue Lightning in Scottish Rite, where you're getting all the degrees in one or two weekends, the best analogy that I've heard or came up with, I can't remember, is that it's like going down a highway and you ever see an attraction sign like, oh, this is so-and-so's birth site. And you're like, hey, I'd love to go visit that. But if you take the exit and get off the highway, you're not going to get to your destination. But you know you would love it if you had the chance to go back, right, and spend more time on it. And so the same thing is true for the Masonic degrees, is you get surface-level parts that are encoded in our ritual, and yet we don't often have time to take that exit, to stop and smell the roses and really enjoy it. So that's what we're going to do tonight. The topic tonight is on the concept of duality. And so I'll open it up first to keep it broad and say, where do we see duality show up in the Masonic ritual, right? If someone didn't quite pick up on it the first time, where would they find duality or dualism in the ritual?
I mean, you can start from the very basis part of the ritual and the duality between darkness and light. It just as emblematical of ignorance and enlightenment or knowledge post-initiation. And I think that's, you know, one of the critical pieces of the Masonic Roundtable is built on this, or the Masonic Roundtable, goodness gracious, one of a, you know, critical piece of the Masonic experience is built on duality and the duality of profanity versus enlightenment.
Right. Not profanity. It's not as naughty words, but being a profane, I love the word choice because it was spot on and yet could be misinterpreted like everything else in Masonic ritual. But I think it's a really good point that just symbolic of being from the exterior world to the interior world, right? Passing through initiation, having a separation between the two is a really, really fascinating aspect. I didn't even think about it, Jason. So thank you. Juan, would you want to build on top of that?
Yeah. The symbolism itself, as you walk through the floor of Masonic Lodge and you have that illusion there of the checkered floor where you have these areas of light and areas of darkness. And if you think about it, it's a duality that follows us through all degrees. This is not something that you encounter at the beginning and now you leave one behind and move to the next one. That checkered floor reminds you, your passage through life, your sojourn is going to be peppered with that light and dark, goodness and evil, ignorance and light. So you can't have one without the other. Let's put it that way. So I do enjoy that message, even though some people behave as if they, you know, once they they cross that threshold, that it's all light going forward. They know everything. They do everything right.
Nailed it.
You know, but that's not how it works.
Yeah, and so I'd build on that to say, yeah, absolutely. The mosaic or checkered pavement, it's not a secret of Masonry, so we can talk a little bit about it. But it is one of the things that we do allude to, both explicitly and implicitly, in the Masonic ritual. And yet, as Juan said, we have these concepts of, as we traverse through life, we're going to have highs and lows, goods and bads. So we're going to have polar opposites. Life is not all, you know, smooth sailing. And so we have to take that lesson to heart and say, hey, how do we deal with it? Not how can we make it whichever side we want it, but how can we embrace it and move on? And so that's one aspect I really like about that. Robert?
Yeah.
I really feel like this is such an interesting concept, because one of the things that we look at is, I don't know if you ever read like these conspiratorial websites about like how they say, you know, Masonry purposely, misdirects the candidate, until he gets to a certain point. And, you know, understood correctly, it's not that we misdirect a candidate. It's more like, we're not going to tell you, we're not going to teach you trigonometry yet, right? Like, we want to teach you addition and subtraction and then multiplication and division. You know, you lead up to these things. And I think what dualism is like really the ground floor of kind of understanding the nature of reality. We from the moment you step into the Masonic Lodge room, as Juan pointed out, right? Like, the first thing that you might notice when maybe you get a tour before a lodge, or maybe you've seen pictures online, or maybe it is something you do see when you're first able to witness something in a Masonic lodge, that checkered the checkered carpet, good and evil, all of these kind of things, any opposite you can think of really fits into the scheme of this. But then at some point in Masonry, you learn about not only the pillars of wisdom and strength, but then you also learn of beauty. And then in higher degrees in Masonry, you begin to learn how those two things are analogous to a separate concept. And then ultimately, when you graduate out of this thing, you know, maybe even at the top of, let's say, the 32nd degree, Masonic degree, right? Like, there, the name of that degree is either Prince of the Royal Secret or Master of the Royal Secret. And you go, like, what even is that? And then this overarching kind of theme is built upon yet again. And then when you take that into a grander, more philosophical study of whatever your, you know, your religion or your mythology, philosophy, spiritualism, whatever it is, you take that to this last kind of level that, had you been exposed to improperly, you essentially could damage the way you view the world. I mean, philosophy and spiritualism and all these things really make the world go, you know, kind of wild, right? I mean, like, they don't necessarily jive with people right off the bat. And so I think that's kind of where dualism gets us on the path and really might be some of the core teaching of what Masonry has to offer.
Yeah, I'd agree, because when I've done some research papers, a lot of my, like, foundational things really come back to the first degree that we go through. And so there are some things, some other papers where things build off of the EA degree. And you know, that's another good example, that we learn about it in the EA degree, and yet it's really not explained too well. But to your point, has to be a foundational philosophic underpinning so that we can appreciate some of the later instruction that we get. All right, so to dive deep into that. So let's dive deep into that. That's I wanted to break apart what dualism is and how it actually applies in kind of the real world, because it wasn't invented by the Freemasons, but it is a philosophic branch. There's a couple different branches of it. And so the first one that I want to talk about is one of my favorites, which is actually called dualistic cosmology. Cosmology meaning, like, what is the explanation of how the universe was created, or what makes up the universe from a philosophic point of view. Like, why does the universe act the way it does? So if we have this dualistic cosmology, then that means that there has to be some explanation of why there is right and wrong in the world, why there is good and evil. And so there's lots of, you know, subtext underneath of that, but the basic premise of dualistic cosmology is that there exists both good and evil in the world. There's no perfect world, there's no utopia, and there's no dystopia. There is a blend, a hybrid along the way, just like we talked about navigating life's journey. I think it's really fascinating. One of the things that kind of broke my head open a little bit a couple years ago was understanding that something that is inherently good as we see it, the form of good, can also be evil in a different fashion, and vice versa. One horrible example of this is, like, you know, Adolf Hitler was a really good artist. Like, if you've seen some of his paintings, they're not bad. And so how could a person that is so embedded with this evilness, that is the epitome of evil, have this artistic, beautiful side to him as well? Definitely not condoning anything related to that, but it just the sense of that there is no absolutism when it comes to good and evil, or you know, the universe as perfect forms of good or perfect forms of evil, right? We've talked in Platonism episodes about forms, that there's these ideas of what a perfect apple should look like, that, and that's where dualism breaks apart this Platonic idea of there being a perfect good and a perfect evil. That also goes into the fact that there are moral goods and moral evils in the world. And then just to kind of nerd out a bit on that, there are subsets of dualism where you have things that are dietheistic, meaning that you may have two different deities, dietheistic, you know, opposing theists, opposing gods, where you may have a creator and a destroyer, right? And then you may have other cultures or religions that are more bi-theistic, that are either separate deities like a mother and a father, right? You need a disciplinarian and you need a loving deity. When something's bi-theistic, it is the union of the two. It's kind of that middle pillar we talked about. So I like that concept more. That appeals more to my nature, to say that that there can be good and bad, and that they may have to often work together rather than being polar opposites of each other. So that's just a rough overview of dualistic cosmology and how it explains why there's good and evil in the world. You'll see a lot of this come up in aspects of, like, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? Right? We don't have answers to that. We can't explain that. And yet, understanding that's just the way it is, and that is part of a dualistic cosmos, kind of embrace it rather than trying to fight it. Right? What do you guys think about that?
I wanted to pull on that string that you mentioned, where you like the idea of these things working together as opposed to being polar opposites. And one description that I really enjoyed, and it resonated with me, was the fact that sometimes these concepts are not necessarily separate, but two facets of a single thing. And that instantly reminded me of that wave-particle duality, where for the longest time in physics, in particle physics, humans looked at specific things like behaving only as a particle. And as the double-slit experiment demonstrates, it doesn't require, it's not depending on our understanding. Things could have a dual nature that goes beyond our understanding. And if we were to go back in time 200 years, for example, you were to try to tell someone that you could have that duality, perhaps they would say, no, that's not how that works. It's either or. But the more you dive into the, you know, experimental side, you start observing without bias, just a clear observation of how things behave, how things work, then you uncover a whole new understanding. And I see parallels in that with Masonry. Perhaps before becoming a Mason, you have an understanding about something that you feel comfortable with, that makes sense to you, that makes you feel good. But then the deeper you delve into the nature of human, of mankind, and you delve deeper into the connection with the divine, that duality between terrestrial and celestial, things that might have made you uncomfortable in the past, now with this new understanding, you can begin exploring it and trying to understand its true nature.
Yeah, and I'll build on that, because that was some of the notes that I had taken beforehand, because again, I think this is a great conversation to talk about. The fact that if we assume that the deity is omnibenevolent, meaning if God is all good, then how can there be any evil in the world, any bad in the world? And so there's lots of different ways to try to explain that. That really is really the whole spinoff of Gnosticism, if you want to think about that in the early church, right? That they had, you know, they came up with these archetypes of like the demiurge, right? To say, well, it wasn't the real God. It was this creator God who was bad. That's why the world's bad. The real God is outside of that. So they try to explain the duality that way. and we can go into that later on. But one of my favorite explanations is as studying the Kabbalah, the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, the pillars themselves are meant to be polar opposites. They're meant to be masculine, feminine. They're meant to have opposite but related strengths. And so the whole point of the Kabbalistic tree is to understand that with one side comes the other side, and the whole point is balance or unity in the middle, right? You try to be the middle pillar, not to swing too far to the right or to the left. And I think that's a beautiful philosophy of how do you approach life, right? Because even in creation, I'm going to, again, nerd out a little bit more. There's part of like, how do you stay focused on a task, and how do you know when to stop? How do you know when to let go? The answer is somewhere in the middle. You have to find that out for yourself. When do you sign? Yeah, when you say, that's enough.
When do you sign the painting?
Right.
That's
break the brush.
That's something I've dealt with a lot, because there's the perfectionist side of me, and then there's that John the Baptist side of me that wants to just, get it done, just be done with it, ship it, right? So there's that tug between those two things. And I say that when you look at that symbol of the Holy St. John's with the circumpunct and the Holy Scriptures, we are hit with all that symbology from the get-go. Once you set foot in the lodge and you get to experience those symbols and say, well, these all live within you. This, the John the Baptist persona character who is passionate, who is zealous and all that. And then you have the subdued, controlled John the Evangelist on the opposite end. And we have that duality symbolized in the solstices. So right. You have those two celebrations that we observe, and it's, to me, it's almost like that reminder in the calendar. It's like, okay, check out what this means. See if you are living up to that expectation of maintaining yourself within those bounds.
Robert, now you've been quiet, mostly because you couldn't get a word in edgewise from me. What, because you actually have done a lot more study of comparative religion and philosophy. Why don't you kind of drop some knowledge bombs on us then?
It's just interesting when we look at exactly what you're talking about, this whole idea of you went where I was kind of treading carefully. And since you kind of opened this thing up talking about Kabbalah, right, a right and a left hand path, or, whatever you want to call it. And the goal is to blend these things into a medium, right? So that you can be, in a practical sense, a well-rounded human being today, maybe in a occult or magical sense, maybe that means apotheosis or an ascension of the sorts, or, whatever that means for you, in your path. Right. But I think what's important to realize too is Juan touched on nature, this idea of nature. And what I think is interesting there is as humans, we like to categorize everything in these buckets, right? Just is good, bad, male, feminine, salty, sweet, whatever, whatever your thing is. And something that came to mind, and it might resonate with some of the viewers and maybe you guys, Werner Heisenberg is a Nobel Prize winner for physics in like 1932. And one of the quotes that he was famous for saying is really quite profound. And it has to do with the way men or, man, the mankind, not like men or women, but men in general would, compartmentalize and try to view nature as it is and to codify it somehow, right? And Werner says, you know, what we observe is not nature, but nature exposed to our method of questioning. And what that's really all about is this idea that we see a world around us that we do compartmentalize, and we try to find this equilibrium, this middle ground, to be the best Robert Johnson I can be, to be the best Juan, to be, you know, whatever. And while we're doing this, you know, that first step is like, oh my gosh, we've compartmentalized into fields of opposites. And then we go, oh my gosh, we can mix both of these opposite things together to get this. You can mix sugar and water and get Kool-Aid, and it's amazing, right? And then once you start to evolve through these different philosophies, what's so interesting is that this kind of ultimate realization that's really exposed in most of the mythologies and religious spiritualities around the world is that that's all an illusion. And so this is where that misdirection comes into play. Like, well, what do you mean it's all an illusion? Duality's not real. It's like Waterworld, right? Kevin Costner comes out and he's like, dualism is a myth. And so, like, in a lot of these later, a lot of these systems talk about there is no good or bad, right? There's only experience, and we compartmentalize so that we can understand. And so that's that, like, dualism, right? And that's why it's so important, because the human mind, as it is, like, we're awesome. Like, we might be greater than the universe, because if you believe in a scientific point of view, you know that the universe could collapse at any time and kill you, right? Like, you're sentient. You understand these things. So humans, like, we're always thinking about virtues and things and how to blend them together. And, you know, masonry gets you thinking on that path. And as you go through those degrees, you do get a greater understanding of those things. And then if you get high enough into some, you know, Kabbalistic schools or whatever, you are exposed to this idea that there is just the one thing. And that as you, just like in, you guys ever do like a yoga technique, right? Where maybe you're doing the breathe in, breathe out. And they say, you're just like the universe breathing. As you breathe in air, the universe requires you to, like, breathe in and then exhale that same amount of carbon to continue its existence. Like, everybody has a part to play. Like, it's a part of a whole. And so the dualism is merely, as Heisenberg pointed out, really, it's just a measure of how we are exposing nature to our own methods of understanding. Sorry.
No, that's profound. Well, I mean,
you did it.
That's it. Good night.
Yeah, maybe. Sure.
No, but that's
not really.
I love when you say wait, did I mute myself? No. You're breathing in and breathing out. As you breathe in and breathe out, so does the universe. And that points me directly to the second law of Hermeticism, where the law of correspondence, where you're talking about as above, so below. And that's for a further point based on, you know, similar to what we were talking about, that you are predisposed to think about it as two separates. And yet it is the same. Like, where do I end and you begin? You know, it's where do I end and the rest of the universe begins? It's that as above, so below. And I really like the practical side of that. I'm a big geek when it comes to astronomy and, you know, anything that has to do with the universe. And I'll spend countless hours outside. Hammy, who's not here, I'm sure he would have chimed in on that as well, because he shares that passion as well. But I love looking at the phenomenons that happen in the universe and finding how they inform me of my life down here. And not to say that my life is so important, but it's a cue. It's like a it's like that baseline that I can follow. I can see what's happening out in the universe, how bodies behave next to each other, how one thing influences another. And I can see the parallels in my life. And thereby, I get to understand a little bit the universe and by consequence, understand myself better. So that duality is one of my favorite dualities.
And what are we but stardust reflecting upon itself?
It's your Alan Watts moment.
but I love talking about that concept, Juan.
Yeah, thank you. Talking about the expanse of the universe, did you see Robert Eyes in this new camera? God dang. Boom.
It's like he's looking into my soul.
Oh my God. I didn't even know they had color. you're muted. We missed that. That was good, though.
Well, he sounds better, so that's good.
I need the Manly P. Hall lighting so you look like Star Trek lighting, the original, you know, where it's just like across the eyes. You're like,
oh, right.
Yeah.
Crispy.
It is.
Awesome. So then let's move on again to there's another type of duality, which I admittedly have not researched enough into, which is the mind-body dualism. The real short version of this is, are the mind and body one and the same, or are they separate entities? And so one thing to build on what we talked about earlier, when we had the concept of a dualistic cosmology, while there's been a lot written on it, the Catholic Church rejected a dualistic cosmology back in the 13th century. And I found that to be fascinating. However, did allow for the idea of a mind-body dualism to continue, which is really important when you think about it, because the whole concept is that the mind and the body are separate, that our what makes us up as far as our thoughts, our experiences, our soul, is separate from the carnal body that we have. I mean, that is probably one of the influential aspects of the religious experience, is that there's something beyond the physical after that. And so if you don't have a separation from a mind and body perspective, then like when this body goes, it all goes. Now, if you look into it, right, you hop over to the Wikipedia page and you start nerding out on the mind-body dualism, there's there's aspects for it and aspects against it. A lot of philosophers are for it. Rene Descartes being one of the biggest proponents for it. And remember, Descartes was the I think, therefore I am, right? So if that's the sum of his philosophy, it makes perfect sense. I am experiencing myself just like I am the universe experiencing myself. I think, therefore I am. My mind is separate from this thing, and I can drive it around. And then you have the more scientific approach, where the mind and body are not separate. The criticisms there are that, you know, we have evidence of people with brain damage having a different personality and thus different physical reactions based off of something that happened in their brain, right? I think Phineas Gage was one of the most
obvious. Gage.
Okay. Yeah.
Railroad spike through the skull.
Just pow. Yeah. Just like right through the eye socket, hung out, and then like was still like up and around talking. However, fascinating story there. However, he just kind of went home and did his own thing, but had severe mood swings, was a completely different person after that. And so he became this marvel of science, that he was able to survive a railroad spike through the head, but from a scientific study, you know, aspect, he's a different person now. So, yeah. That proves that the mind and the body are connected, especially from a personality perspective. So that's an interesting aspect. I could see both sides. I really can. What say you guys?
So My issue with the dualism of the mind and the body is, where does the spirit come into play?
Right. It's very binary. So,
Right. So if we take a look at the, you know, the all spark or that spark of the divine that we have in us, essentially the soul, you know, I ascribe to, you know, kind of a trinity of your being, where you have your body, you have your mind and your emotions that are shaped by your experiences. And then you also have the soul, which is kind of that third part. So it might be that, you know, the spiritual can be a little bit more easily connected to the mind. I haven't quite figured all of that out yet, but right now I see it kind of in three parts as opposed to two. Yeah,
no, exactly. And there is a concept that we don't cover here because it's not dualistic. There is the tripart theology as well, that you have the body, mind, and soul as three separate parts of Christian theology, at least, as opposed to mind and body. Mm-hmm. All right. Juan, what do you think about that?
I if you could hear what's happening in my head right now, basically, I respect what you're talking about, Jason, of course. I'm trying to think, like, where is that third? Not just where located, but what responsibilities separate than the mind do they have? And I do remember at some point in my life seeing it like that, but the more I think about it, the less evidence I see for that third, almost as if it's just an expression of the mind or the second. But of course, that's just a conversation. I'm sure that would be a great conversation for us to have over some bourbon. Just to explore, like, where do we acquire that belief other than theology? And are we just comfortable with the fact that, okay, we see it like that, but how, you know? I mean, and I'm not criticizing your point of view. I'm really curious.
I'm offended.
Where is...
Clearly offended.
But where is that difference?
This is the last show that Juan's going to be on.
Forever.
So, no, you bring up an interesting point, which is that okay, to be a separate, distinct entity, there has to be a separate, distinct lane in the road. And I wonder if the soul is much more of a subtle entity, kind of almost as that silent passenger, kind of just guiding things, nudging things a little bit, like your, you know, when you get that pang of your conscience, like, I should really have figured out why my camera keeps saying that my viewfinder is inactive before I went live on the show. That pang of, you know, guilt or you know, spurring to do something. You know, I feel like there are discrete lanes in the road for the spiritual in moderating really between the mind and the body, but it's much more perhaps subtle than, you know, one might think.
Even because when I think of our perception, and a lot of people see themselves this way, almost as if they are this passenger behind the wheel when it comes to their mind. So they witness what they think, almost like separate, like, oh, here's what I'm thinking. And they see that separation. And that separation in the physical, it's very practical, because you know that I am separate from this stove, thereby I'm not going to put my hand on it when it's glowing red. But from within, everything to me points out that there's no separation. not even from the physical. It's all happening. Like when I think, where did that idea come from? Almost as if it's separate from me. You know, the idea is part of me. The idea is part of this whole composition. And I'm becoming aware of the idea as it races in consciousness. But where does it rise from? Is that arising separate from me, or is it all part of the same thing? I just find that very interesting. Like, I don't have an answer for it.
There's a whole like ontological argument for like where things come from. And that's kind of like what I'm having a hard time staying away from thinking about is like the whole it's back to what John was talking about, cosmological argument, like Kamal's cosmological argument for like first cause. And so we're always asking that question, like, if
are you talking about the prime mover thing has argument? Become,
what's that?
Are you talking a prime mover argument or?
Yeah, in a sense, but like in a philosophical sense, right? Like we always ask, like, to what one is coming from, you know, where does that idea come from? Like it gets me thinking about this idea of a beginning. And if something has a beginning,
right?
Then we know that something has to have made it so. And then you start this kind of endless argument where from a long, like forever, people said, oh, the universe has always been. Well, we've calculated the age of the universe, and so we know it has not always been, which means infinity is a mathematical concept that isn't real at all. Like, there is no such thing as infinity. I mean, cut time away from it, because we don't know about time, right? Like, forever may be. That might be a thing, you know, secular time, but infinity is not a thing. So thinking about where things come from is a really interesting question when we think about the beginning of a thought, what spurred the thought, did it already exist, did you just access it, right? And then there's all this occult writing and mythological writing that talks about the Akashic record, or many physicists, even they get into this realm, right, where they talk, Niels Bohr and David Bohm talk about the implicate order, you know, where the things get pulled from, but have always been there. And because you are that thing, Juan, that's, you just accessed it. Like your brain was like, oh, bink, I think I'll take that, you know? And I don't know how this fits into dualism, so I'm just going to digress.
I know. Because like you start bumping into, you know, even free will when you think.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what I just thought about, like, where the hell does that come about? You know, and I've played around with some thought experiments that shine a light on that whole feeling of separation, when in fact it's just happening. And where does it happen from? How does it happen? It's a mystery for everyone. Like,
well, you know, Juan, right now you were predestined to have free will.
Yes. I had no choice.
Man, that hurt my head.
As the former Calvinist in the room.
Yeah. Well, you've broke my head tonight, Jason. That's going to mess me up now.
Spend enough time in the Presbyterian Church and a lot of things will break.
A lot of things will break your head.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Joe Martinez sent us a super chat. Thank you, Joe. Saying that, Robert, infinity is a thing. # infinity is a thing, Robert.
And infinity can be many sizes things.
Okay. I'm just saying, if I gave you an infinity number of books for a library, okay, and then I said, okay, I'm taking away, you have infinity red books and infinity black books, and I'm taking away all of your black books, you still have infinity books. It's irrational. It's not real.
Oh, we have another update from the Super Chats where Joe Martinez says, #RJ is less informed, sans beard. You lost all the knowledge when you trimmed the sides. So
it's like the Samsung effect. Yep.
Joe, if I gave you infinity coins and I numbered them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 all the way into infinitum, and then I took away every coin after the third coin, how many coins do you have? 3.
Infinity.
It's just a math concept. Sorry, buddy. We're going to disagree.
Imaginary numbers. Real or imaginary?
Okay. Ooh, I need an episode. We need to find how to tie this to Freemasonry so we can talk about it. Because if you looked at whole numbers, you have an infinite number of them.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you take 10% of each number, you have an infinity of those. But right. Mathematically, there will be
you can never
more
get
of those
to the next number
than the other.
That's how we tie this in. It's just quantifiable stuff so that humans can make sense of it.
Mm. That's true.
Love it.
On that note, we're here. We're now at the time for the final question. Yes, we made it this far in the show. And this one's an easy one because we got a little deep there. And, you know, I'm always going to say Joe's right. So RJ is going to have to defend himself as we get to wrap things up. Final question is, which of the dualistic concepts we talked about today is your favorite and why? Remember, just as a reminder, we have the dualistic cosmology and we have the mind-body dualism. Or maybe there's a third option. # there's no third option in dualism. Okay, Jason, we'll start with you. What do you think?
Mind-body dualism has definitely been my favorite topic tonight, just because it's something that in my own spiritual journey over the past year or two, I've thought quite a bit about just who am I as a human being and what are my component pieces and how do they work with each other and against each other, and how do I make sense of the creator in reference to, you know, who I am. And so I've put a lot of thought into this idea of mind body dualism or mind body spirit. And it's just, it's, you know, it's a philosophical debate and argument that I could get into with someone for probably hours on end, just because it's fascinating to try to make out who we are really. And I don't know if any of us will ever really have an answer for that. It's one of life's great mysteries, I think. So that's definitely why the mind-body dualism discussion was my favorite tonight.
Thank you very much. All right. Juan Sepulveda, what was your favorite dualistic concept?
I have to agree with I have to agree with Jason on this one. The mind-body dualism is one that I find fascinating, and mostly because of all the unanswered questions that it brings to me. I like that challenge of, am I separate from myself? What happens at the end? Is there a portion that remains and the other that ceases to exist? One that annihilates itself as the other one moves on. It's fascinating, especially when one tries to basically break from the confines of our biased upbringings and try to discover something from a more pure and less controlled way. I want to know, not because you tell me, not because you force me to accept, but let's explore more. Is there really a duality, or is it all just one thing? That's it. I enjoy that. But to close out, thank you so much all for listening and for watching. This is a lot of fun to have these conversations with friends. If you like these kinds of conversations and the chat is not enough, how about you call a friend? Get together when COVID permits, get together with some other brothers and have these kinds of conversations. Don't pay attention to this. How often do human interactions are just limited to the superficial like traffic, weather, and maybe some more complex topics, but when can you really talk about these things in depth and uncover more of yourself? Give that a try. So thank you as always. I invite you to go to thegentlemansbrotherhood.com. New episode coming out tomorrow where we're talking about being obliviously rude like some of these jerk faces here with us. Good night.
Awesome. All right. Our resident philosopher, Robert.
Yeah. So thank you very much. This has been an incredible episode. Sorry about my tangential nature. So I really enjoy topics like this because these are, I mean, to be so cliche, these are the big questions. Lucas Hess said it in the chat. These are the questions. In terms of the question, you know, which do I prefer? Which dualism do I prefer? I truly feel that they are one and the same, or at least, in the concept of kind of new age thought, they might be, because what we're really dealing with, right, is they say mind and body. And when you look at the conception of those two ideas, one is considered, you know, Rex Mundi, right? Like this sinful flesh, compared to the salvation or the, you know, the pristine mind. So that in itself is a duality of positive and negative, which just goes from this, you know, back to the T square, or, you know, the cross beam of a X or a cross. And so, but when I think about this, what my favorite is probably, I enjoy the same as Jason and Juan have talked about, because it helps me think about, it's more personal, I guess, right? And I think about my actions a whole lot more, and how my mind and body will reconcile something. You know, you could even go into psychology and think about the id and the ego, or the id and the superego coming together to give you some baseline of regularness, or the ego where you maintain yourself. So all of these things are just, I guess, kind of archetypal in a way to help you along the way. I really enjoyed the mind and spirit, the mind body type dualism myself, even though the other version is so much cool stuff, you know, like Osiris and Typhon, and I don't know how to say the ancient Persian version. I like the evil is Ahriman, and then the good is Ormuz. I don't know how to say it. Anyway, like, you have all of this cool historical knowledge there on the other side. Anyway, thanks for watching. If you like Masonic podcasts, WCY podcast, or Whence Came You podcast, Sunday nights, 9:30. And thanks so much for everything and the comments and hanging out. And listen to what Juan said. Get with people because your mind depends on it. When you can.
Right, Juan. I cut to you just because you're holding a cat. So don't worry about it. I'm coming back to me. I know you're wrapped up for tonight, so let me get into it. Also wanted to do a special plug for Robert's last episode of Whence Came You, because he and I chatted a little bit about the book. Yeah, so this book right here, the Master's Word, a short treatise on the light, the word, and the self. We went into kind of the why behind the book. And so both why we were interested in it, how, you know, what our thought process was, and what we enjoyed working on. So definitely go check out Whence Came You, this past episode, where we go into it and nerd out on other types of philosophic arguments, and kind of theosophic arguments. So I think that's a cool episode. I enjoyed recording that with you. As for my favorite topic, learning a lot more about the mind-body dualism, the interesting thing about that is that I see it. I see both sides of that argument, of it not being separate because of the scientific side, where, you know, if you have an exposed brain and you push on the gray matter, you know, you'll see a reaction in the body. And yet we also can. One thing that I was thinking about earlier was, as Juan was alluding to, in certain meditative practices, part of the first step of meditation is to step back and observe your thoughts, right? Don't react to them. don't respond to them, don't get sucked into them, but step back and view your thoughts going by. And so the whole point is to separate yourself from your thoughts, that monkey mind. Well, the first lesson there is that you are not your thoughts, which leads right into that whole separation, that your body, your thoughts are not who you are, is not who your inner sense, your id really is. So I think that's and that's observable. Like, that's something that I've experienced meditating and all that. But I will go back to what I said earlier, my favorite dualistic concept that, you know, we can take away and apply some of those Masonic lessons is the dualistic cosmology, right? How do we understand the world, and how do we make sense of there being both good and evil in the world? How do we not try to put things into those two buckets, which is easy to do. We do it all the time with everything else in our daily life, Pepsi or Coke, right? Right or left, you know, political ideologies. Like, we love to polarize, especially in 2021. And yet the answer is yes. The answer is somewhere in the middle. And it really takes a wise person to be able to navigate the middle, to find that balance, to be that middle pillar. And that's why I like the dualistic cosmology approach. So,
libertarianism.
Maybe. You know, there's lots of options. Roberts, what are you holding up there, Robert?
I just wanted to point out there's a book, Mackey's Symbolism of Freemasonry, and it's not one of the greatest books or whatever, and it's kind of different. But this is chapter, I don't know, what's that Roman
22?
Number? 20, no, it's XXIL.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah.
What is that? Yeah. Anyway, the rite of entrusting and the symbolism of light. And he really has, this is a great, like, probably 10-15 pages on this whole idea of dualism. So it's a pretty good primer, but it's all cosmological, I'll say that.
Nice.
So, I mean, worth a check on archive.org, right? Check it out.
Sweet. Awesome. Thanks for that. And I want to thank you all very much for watching, especially the patrons who've been helping support the show. And we'll see you next week. Keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.